to the North Peace MB Church Roundtable Podcast. For more information, visit npmbchurch.com.
Well, you are listening to the North Peace Roundtable Podcast episode. Oh, man, I always forget.
I think it's 36, 37-ish.
30? Yeah, I know that it's 30-something.
For those of you counting, feel free to
leave us a five-star review and tell us what episode number it is. But my name's Andrew, and with me as always is Corland.
Hello, hello.
And Cameron.
Good morning, everyone.
Wow, that was...
I was going to blame
that. Was very inclusive.
I was going to everyone, yeah. All of they. I was thinking like, oh, we don't know what episode. It's because of the pandemic. Everything's confused.
That's
because
true.
Of Corona.
And we didn't record last week. And
but we started like 3 weeks or 2 weeks before the world shut down?
Something like that, yeah.
I think it was March or end of February.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's been the Corona podcast this entire
it's
year.
It's the pandemic pulpit or Corona
okay,
corner.
There.
There's so many ones you could do. But if you are new listening, usually we record one of these about once a week, and the three of us talk about theology or the Bible or something connected to Christian living and kind of the outworkings of that. And so thank you for listening. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes or YouTube or Spotify or whatever, all the millions of ways that you can listen to this. So today we have kind of a interesting topic, a little bit heavier, but it's kind of blowing up all over whatever we call it, Christian news. But we wanted to weigh in because I've actually had a few people ask me questions related to this. So many of you probably are aware of or know of who Ravi Zacharias was. He's passed away now. But if not, he was a very famous Christian apologist, traveled the world and, you know, did debates and lectures and all that kind of stuff. And very smart man. And he was often held up as this kind of like model of, you know, integrity and just a really solid Christian example. But near the end of his life, and I don't know all the timeline and that doesn't really matter, but it kind of started coming out that maybe there was some sexual sin that had been going on for years behind the scenes. And we won't get into all the details of that, but, you know, massage parlors and all that kind of sketchy stuff that had been going on for years and years and years, all the way up until, you know, until he passed away, I think. So this big report came out, and now lots of people are going like, what? What in the world? Like, this guy from the outside seemed like a solid man of integrity, and this kind of stuff, it was going on behind the scenes for years and years and years. And to be sure, like, Ravi's not the only one. Like, even in the past year, there's been several kind of high-profile, you know, Christian celebrities, and we'll talk about that. But, you know, Jerry Falwell Jr., who was the president of Liberty University, came out. There was some sexual sin in his past or present or whatever. I don't know all the details about that. Carl Lentz, the hip, cool pastor from New York, he came out that he was having an affair, and just on and on and on. So I guess we don't want to just, like Cam said, we don't want to beat a dead horse and just talk about like, oh, it's so awful. And I think more so we want to ask, like, why does it seem that this kind of stuff happens like over and over and over? I mean, Bill Hybels was a few years ago. It's like, what? This guy was abusing women for years? Like, what? Why does it seem to happen? And is it connected to this idea of like, Christian celebrity super pastors, or I don't know. It just seems like, and this is maybe the skeptical side of me, give it enough time and something terrible is going to happen, right? And that's, I know that's not true, but it feels like that sometimes when you go, man, it's just one after the other after the other. So why does that kind of stuff happen? And well, let's start there, I guess. Like, is there and I know that we can say, well, it's our sin nature. And yes, I know that that's the all of, even all of us in this room are capable of that. Like, no one is, but by the grace of God, we are all capable of just really terrible sin. But is it, like, why do you think it seems to be more so maybe these high profile
super creepy.
Or maybe it's not more so. Maybe it is the fact that, okay, yeah, there's sin nature, but then we almost forget when someone gets to the status that they no longer have a sin nature and that they're, like, immune to temptation. And we live in a culture that idolizes this Christian celebrity-style way of influencing people, and we almost, I think, we can actually say we've seen people, we may have been the type of people that will base teaching on the amount of followers, on the size of church, on the depth of their, you know, influence, and not necessarily on their theology or the way they teach, but more so on how many people are influenced by them.
Yeah.
I've seen that in our own, you know, country. There are these celebrity style preachers and communities who, it's like, no one really asks what they believe. They just like the feel and the following, and then that, you know, leave that for some time and maybe even generations, and then you just have this shock when it's revealed that there could have been something behind the scene. And with the whole Ravi thing, I just see all these emojis of shock and disgust, and it's like, well, he's just a guy. Like, and we've talked on this podcast before of, like, looking at saints in the Bible and the fact that they've been idolized also, and we forget they're human beings. And it's sad that they may arise to a place where they no longer have authentic accountability and the ability to be open and transparent about sin.
Yeah.
Because it would destroy this thing, this monster that our culture has created around them, and they just become isolated, I think, in their own popularity.
Yep. You want to add anything?
Yeah, I think that what you guys are saying is very true of the situation, right? Like, I when I was looking into some answers on some of this stuff and just kind of reading on Christian leadership and failing, there was a quote that I saw that I think kind of sums up what we're trying to say here, and that is that the best of men are men at best. Like, we aren't, no matter what position you hold in spiritual leadership or in life in general, you're not immune to sin. And so I think that that's where it's so, it can almost expose our own heart in that situation, right? Like, if the sin of man shocks you to the point where you're having a life or a spiritual crisis because you have no idea what you believe anymore, I think it's fair to say maybe you idolize the man more than the God he was pointing you towards.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that that's what's important to remember too, is that any Christian leader, whether they've fallen to sexual sin or any type of sin, their goal should be pointing towards God. That's what they should be doing, is directing everybody they speak to towards God. But then when they fail, that's their sin nature coming out. But that doesn't mean that you should then say, oh man, now what am I going to do? Well, you keep following God. Like, that's where you were trying to go in the first place, right? So,
And I think we only hear about the ones that are caught in what would appear as unrepentant sin.
Sure.
Where it's like, it's been revealed, it's been exposed, and then there's like this fallout afterwards. But I would venture to say, anecdotally, there would be, and I can think of one pastor who resigned, you know, through a process of some accusations, but then, you know, follow through an investigation by the board, and then it's kept quite quiet because of the dignity of everyone involved and even the church. And so I think that happens more than we would know, but it's not scandalous, so we don't see it everywhere because it's not been published the same. It's actually appropriate. But we can, I know of people who have stepped back from things because of clouds of uncertainty or accusation. They've done it right. Listen, I'm going to step back.
Yeah.
I apologize. There's been some, you know, compensation, whatever that looks like to victims, and it's been appropriate.
Yeah.
But these large scale scandalous types are unfortunate because we're left as the public looking at this situation saying, we don't see evidence of repentance sin. That would have been really nice. So that's maybe the shocker also. It's like, you know, in this one particular case of Ravi, it's like, this guy had time since, you know, being diagnosed with a terminal illness to be like, maybe this is you know, it's the movie kind of scene where you take your last few months and you kind of make things right. You know what I mean? We didn't get to see that. And we can only hope that was his heart before he passed.
Yeah.
But we don't know. We're just left not knowing. And I think that's the shock.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting as we're talking, like, there's something very, like, the idol of, like, power and success. I think that's why a lot of times these kind of, you know, high profile celebrity, because there is something very alluring about
being known
and being successful and having power. And a lot of times you'll hear, like, you know, the Bill Hybels example, there were people on his board that started to be like, but it was like, but he's Bill. Like, I can't say anything. Look, the church is 40,000 people. So it's like, it's almost like, and we've done this to ourselves in stupid celebrity Christian culture. It's like certain people just become, oh man, they're like untouchable. Like, look at their following. Look at the good that's happening. That was the same with Ravi. Like, he had an opportunity to come out to some of the board, and then he kind of covered stuff up and the board went anyways. And you see that happening a lot, that it's almost like, you know, they've made, like, their best-selling author, 40,000 people come to their church, they're invited all over the world. Like, and it's like that, I think, the lure of, like, success and power, I think then people buy into their own hype and they're like, yeah, I am. Like, so on a much smaller scale, even in a tiny church in Fort St. John, there's temptation like that, right? And I've shared before about pride and all that kind of stuff. But there is this lure to be like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I could write a book, right? It's just like... And maybe that would, like, I could get invited to, like, some conferences and, you know, and just really dumb things. And the allure of it is, I think for anybody in ministry, it's kind of like, yeah, I want to have influence. And, but then it can very quickly be like, yeah, well, influence for what? Like, to be known as, wow, there's that guy. Oh my gosh. I love your books, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Or is it like, I want influence so that I can, like, point people to Jesus? And that's a really, you know, dangerous line. I
would venture to say they all start like that.
Probably.
Like, but it's just gross monster of a culture that's been created that we actually have to fight against. I think that's that should be our focus as Christians today, to help our leaders and to help those around us to somehow walk in humility. Like, I don't know, the fanfare, and I've experienced that too. Like, small town, you're, you know, in a position where people are, you know, recognizing it's a weird feeling.
We joked about that when we took our family skating.
Oh yeah.
And someone was like, hey, Pastor Andrew, and I joked and was like, oh, I just want to live a normal life.
That's right. Why do I carry Sharpies around for autographs?
Yeah. Fine, come here. I'll sign your skate or whatever.
But it's kind of, could you imagine like that just on such a large scale where then, you know, just like celebrities hiding themselves in the public because they can't go out. Like, that would be so annoying. And
yeah,
it does create this vacuum of isolation to which then you're wrapped up in it. But I guess that's a bad example because celebrity status, you know, from a movie or something is different because we can see that being a little more secular. But when it becomes Christian ministry, then it's like, wow, God is really blessing them.
Yeah.
Like, God is doing this. He's leading this. Well, I don't know. That person could just be a really gifted writer and have some cool ideas and naturally grow in popularity because they have a really good PR person and a really good media team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe God is just blessing them the exact same way he's blessing every other Christian minister in the region.
Yeah, don't assume because someone's popular and successful that it's because of God's blessing. I think that's really dangerous because you look at
that makes them untouchable.
Well, at Joel Osteen who preaches not a biblical gospel and he's super successful. And if you just look at numbers, you would go, wow, that guy must be being blessed by God. Mm-hmm. Best-selling author, 70,000 people who come to it. Like, so you can't base it on that. I think you're right. Like, But and then one of the things too, I think, is then when these people then begin to just buy their own hype, and that it seems to be a regular pattern. It's just kind of like, I am pretty great, like, right? And you, I am a really good author, and yeah, look at all my influence. And then you start, I think lots of times, then people begin to feel like untouchable, and I'm above certain things. And that was some of the disappointing stuff that came out in the Ravi report, like how he would manipulate women based on like, well, hey, you know, God's blessing me because of my faithfulness with this. And it's kind of like, yeah. Do you actually believe that? Like, that's pretty twisted. Like, yeah. But maybe you bought into your own hype that certain things don't apply to you anymore. And that's really dangerous. So,
and then a step further, like if this were to be revealed, it could have a negative impact on people's gospel narrative. And would you want to be responsible for that? That's that's some sick abuse.
Yeah.
That's manipulation to a degree that is pretty damaging.
Yeah.
For someone, you know, I just imagine victims in that case just not just having this weird confusion about God, you know, you're like, oh wow, like that's not serving God, but it's been painted like that.
Yeah.
That's I feel sad for people who've been victimized like that through that type of manipulation.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's as uncommon as we feel. Like, I think there's, that can happen in your 40-person church or your 40,000-person church.
I think I'm glad you brought that up because, like, and you said it earlier, like, this, again, it's, you know, the guy who has a 100-person church can do the same thing, right? but I think, I don't know, the bigger that your following gets, I don't know if it's just the temptation becomes more, or the allure of it gets stronger because of these idols of power and success. I'm not sure. But even in small town, you know, it's interesting. So you think about Christian celebrity culture, but even like what we've done for years and years and years is we've elevated like pastors or ministry leaders in the same, even if you don't have a book deal, like it's kind of like, man, those guys must never sin. Like, he's the pastor. Like, almost like, you know, touch not God's anointed, right? It's like we do that in any size church. I've even had that conversation here with people like, oh, like, yeah, I'm a human being. Like, I'm a regular person, right? And but there, we do this like, oh, he's been called into ministry. Like, he must be super, like a super Christian. And it's kind of like, no, that is super dangerous. Like,
and sometimes from the other side of the table, it's like, man, I can't believe I get paid to do this.
Yeah,
like,
I can't believe,
I'm a professional Christian.
I get paid to read my Bible. This is amazing. But I think that's dangerous too. And I don't know if it's a generational thing, and maybe like newer generations are starting to go like, no, pastors are real people. I don't know, but I've had that experience here where it's kind of like, but you're the pastor though, and I'm like, yeah, but like it's a job title. It doesn't make me a level 8 Christian and you're a level 6 Christian. That's so silly. Like, sure, you can talk about spiritual maturity, sure, but that has nothing to do with like I'm extra anointed or that guy's extra anointed. It's just, to me, then we're getting into this like silly game of ranking people and, you know, that kind of stuff. So then for people in ministry, then, like, what do you do to avoid this kind of stuff?
I was actually thinking about job interviews, and I've interviewed people, I've been interviewed, and there's always a question like, what are your weaknesses? Where can you improve? And
I work too hard.
Well, it's all the stupid things, eh? Like, oh, I just don't have good boundaries. You're just selling.
I care about my job too much.
But it's this common realization, no matter what scale you are, that there are places of deficiency that you can improve upon.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that not a litmus kind of marker for Christian ministry also?
Like, yeah.
There should always be these interval check-ins. Like, what are you struggling with? Like, where are your shortfalls? Like, what are you working on? And where are you being mindful to be more present? Like, which aspect of your life? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
for me, it's my patience and parenting. Like, I have a short fuse sometimes because I just get so annoyed with my kids, right? And so it's something I have to really work on. I've gone to bed telling my wife, like, man, I'm a crappy dad because I just, like, just frustrating. And so working, praying for patience and, not, and you know, peace. And I'm not a monster by any means, but I mean, but I feel like, we've already said, when you get to that position or that place where you're stuck in this kind of vacuum of celebrity, like, who do you do that with? Like, who is your accountability? How do you admit fault? Because you can't be a human being and not be navigating some form of self-improvement or like thinking about an area in your heart or mind where there could be sin. So you have to be praying for that.
I think in Christian ministry, and I'm not saying, I'm gonna try and be careful how I say this, because I don't want to.
For once,
I don't want to give leeway for there to be like a so we can keep sinning, right? But like in Christian ministry, we really make it sound like what we've talked about, that there should not be sin ever. Like, that once a person reaches a point where they'd be in Christian ministry, they've reached a level of perfection that allows them to sit in that position. And so we I don't know how to say it. We make sin this thing then that we think shouldn't touch those leaders because they're leaders. And I think that that's the fault of the people, even in the church, the leaders themselves and everybody there, because we try to separate them from sin. Instead, we should be coming around them and helping them recognize, like, look, sin is going to affect us no matter what. How can we help you with that? Like, how can we encourage you to follow God? Because even leaders, like you said, Andrew, you're human, right? Instead of shaming people for having sin, if we truly believe in the saving power of Jesus Christ, there shouldn't be shame in that. There should be redemption. There should be repentance. There should be those things. So how do we as a body of Christ come around leaders and encourage that and remind them of what Jesus has done?
So I'm going to play devil's advocate. So if I'm a Christian leader and I have an affair, should we just go, well, he confessed and repented, he can still be a Christian leader?
I don't think so.
Yeah, so I think I get what you're saying, but I want to make sure people listening aren't like, oh.
Yeah.
Because even like the, you know, 1 Timothy 3 and Titus talks about like certain qualifications. And and I agree. Sometimes we make it like, here's the check box mark check. List whenever the
check is that a thing?
I think I had a mini stroke there. But we do it as like, well, he's not perfect, so he can't be an elder in the church. So I agree with you there. But then there's
are sins that you shouldn't do.
Yeah, but yeah. Here's the thing, it's interesting. If I'm a Christian and like I drive a bus, I'm not gonna lose my job and this sounds so crass and I'm sorry, but I'm not gonna lose my bus driving job if I cheat on my wife. Right? It's still sin. It's awful. It's terrible. You should repent. But I think it's slightly different if I'm a leader in the church, right? I'm a pastor and I cheat on my wife. I don't think I should be in ministry anymore because it's kind of like, but I get what you're saying.
And I agree with that. I think that there is obviously natural consequence and should be consequence for sin, right? Even if you look at the story of David and Bathsheba, in his case, he remained in a position of leadership. They still lost their son.
Yeah.
There was
a
natural consequence for his sin, right? So I think that's sometimes like we want justice, right, in these scenarios. And sometimes that does look like a loss of leadership. If you're in a Christian leadership, I think it probably should happen, right? And so it's not like these things go unpunished. And even in the case of Ravi Zacharias, and if he wasn't repentant, there is consequence for sin.
But I think what you're saying, that like we shouldn't be shocked. Like, we're humans and we sin. And it shouldn't be like but you're a leader. It should be like,
well, and then we cast them out into the darkness, never to be heard from again.
Saying. Like, there is consequences. And
should be shocked when people rape people, though. Well, yep. You know what I mean? Like, how does it get so far with gone unnoticed? And, you know, how do we encourage our leaders? Well, we'll never touch these star celebrity people today, but we can definitely pray for them. Like, if you're listening and you're following someone and you're watching
Stephen
them.
If Furtick happens to be listening to our podcast, I think he does.
Right. But if you're sitting at home and you have your favorite pastor that you listen to, and it's not Andrew for some reason, pray for that person, right? Like that if they are dealing with something, that they have a means to talk with someone about it, that before it gets to straight on victimization of a person, up into including something as gross as rape. Like that's, it could have started 10 years ago with lustful thoughts and feelings of coveting people other than your spouse.
And if you don't feel like you can tell, then sure. And you're isolated and you're on it this just, pedestal and then it just leads to worse and worse and worse and worse things. I just to go back to that question, like how do leaders put stuff, safeguards, I guess, to so that this stuff doesn't have to happen. I have two thoughts. One, have you guys ever heard of the Billy Graham rule? So Billy Graham, Christian celebrity, right? And again, it's hard to, like, as far as we know, there wasn't any hidden stuff, right? It's hard to, you can't, it's hard to judge when you don't know people's hearts, right?
Yeah.
But he, faithful evangelist, from at least from what we can tell. And he had a rule early on in his ministry that he said, I'm just not going to ever be alone with a woman who's not my wife. And he got mocked relentlessly for that. Like, you prude, like, blah, 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 blah. But here's a guy that remained faithful to his wife for his entire life. So so I think even if you just think practically, I think there's things that any Christian can do that you go,
definitely,
that you go, I'm just going to put these safeguards in place because I'm a human being and I have a sinful flesh and I'm not going to give myself, you know, room to do that. And I've even when I was doing youth ministry, I learned how to do these things so that, you know, if I'm driving teens home after youth, I'm not left alone in a car with a teen girl, right? I have a leader with me, or just stuff like that. Or even here, there was, so I don't, you know, meet, there was a, I'll give you two examples. There was a girl who goes to our church that was like, I'd love to like meet for lunch and just talk with you. Can we go to a restaurant and meet for lunch? I said, no, sorry. I can meet you at the church office and where there's, you know, other staff people and stuff like that. And she was like, oh, okay. Yeah, sure. That's fine. Because I'm like, I don't even want any kind of hint of like, Andrew's out with another woman for lunch. That's weird. Who's not his wife. And some people said, oh, give me a break. You're being so over. But hey, like, I'd rather be overprotective and not allow any kind of foothold or allow my flesh like an inch so that it doesn't become then the next thing, then the next thing, then the next thing. There was another example where after, I can't, this was a few years ago, after some event that we did, there was a girl left that was going to walk home and she was like, hey, can I get a ride with you, Andrew? I was like, nope. Sorry. But luckily there was another, I'm like, she can give you a ride.
Right.
But I'm like, I just don't want to drive a single girl home. Sorry. Yeah. That sounds so cruel, but I don't want to. So I think for any Christian, you there's certain just super practical things that you can do. Like, you know, I have software on my computer that monitors what I do, because people could say, well, you're a pastor. You don't need that. Yes, I do. Sure. Right. Like, so I think there's certain things that any Christian can do that says, I am very likely to sin. I need to put like safeguards in place so that I don't do this thing. So yeah, it's called the Billy Graham rule. And I remember, who was the vice president? Mike Pence. He followed that rule and he got made fun of relentlessly. You won't go out and have a dinner with one of your staff member who's a woman. And yet here's a guy that is faithful to his wife. And as far as we know, hasn't had any scandals. And so sure, you look like a prude, but I'm like, I'd rather that than Ravi, right? The other, you know what I mean? Like, so I think there's just certain practical things that you can do. The other thing, I don't know if there's ministry leaders that listen, but the other thing is to have people in your life that, like, I remember Matt Chandler said this, because Matt Chandler's a famous pastor, and someone asked him, like, how do you stay grounded being, you know, your church is 10,000 people, you write books, and he said, I have people in my life that just know me as Matt, not like Pastor Matt Chandler. And I think I've really appreciated, like, you guys too, like, you are guys that that know me for me.
Yeah, like, drive you home, drive you home drunk.
Yeah, no, whatever.
That was a joke.
Hey, he's passed down the ditch again. No, not that. But there's certain things that, you know, I don't say around certain people. And that's not that I'm like living this double life, but there's certain people that, yeah, like you guys know me as Andrew, hopefully not Reverend Dr. Andrew. But I think that's helpful for anybody in ministry who, you know, don't purposefully isolate yourself that you are the untouchable pastor or ministry leader or whatever your position is. Like, have people that just know you for you and who can do life with you and hold you accountable. And I think that's so needed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we make leadership more isolated than it needs to be in some ways.
Yeah. Totally.
That's not like, I'm not saying that to say that any, if you're in any leadership position, just go to your friends and disclose absolutely every detail about, like, obviously, like, that's inappropriate. That's not professional. It's not.
Do it from the pulpit. That's better.
but you can process things well. You can bring people into your life, into your struggles, yeah, without disclosing information that doesn't need to be disclosed. Right. And yeah, so I think that it is incredibly important to bring people in, and sin, it's a lot harder for sin to have a foothold in your life when there's light shining in on that area.
Yeah, totally.
Whether that looks like accountability with people around you, whether that looks like just open and honest communication about that with people that do know you or see you.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder for that to get a grip on your life. So sin will always drive you to shame and always drive you to secrecy, no matter the sin.
Yeah, totally.
And so it's really important to stay active in putting that stuff out into the light.
Yeah. And I guess that applies to any Christian, right? We've been talking about like leaders and pastors, but any Christian should have people that knows you well enough, right? That can call things in your life and mm-hmm. sin can be brought out into the open. So yeah, I guess just anybody listening should have that and then put practical things in place that can keep you from the temptation of sin.
Yeah. And putting accountability software on your phone doesn't make you less of a Christian.
No, exactly. Right.
It's, we're physical and spiritual beings. So why not use physical tools to help yeah. us on our journey? Right. Like don't just ask, is it a sin? Like lay aside every encumbrance and run.
That's
the
a
race.
Big word. Encumbrance. Now to people listening, I want to end with this question. And maybe you kind of already touched on it, but I've had a conversation with maybe two or three people who are very rattled. Like, I can't believe, like I heard one person say that it wasn't them, but someone else that they knew was like, I became a Christian through Ravi Zacharias's teaching.
Yeah.
Or put in whoever the leader is. Right. And, how would you encourage someone who's feeling like, oh my gosh, is that all a lie? Like, and whose own walk with Jesus, they're kind of feeling shaky right now. And besides the point of like, well, just snap out of it. Like, it's not that. I don't know. Like, people are actually kind of feeling these things. So, like, how would you encourage them? I know that we say, like, yeah, we don't worship Ravi or Bill Hybels or any of those guys.
Yeah. The message that Ravi shared was fascinating. He was a brilliant guy, an apologist who spent his career defending the Bible, like in smart ways, not just God said so you should believe. Like, he was able to dissect scripture and teach, and I believe that was genuine, and it's truth that could be used today. The sad part with his ministry is that at some point he lost an internal kind of struggle with sin. But again, what we're doing is we're putting sin on this hierarchy too, because there's times I'm sure you've preached after an argument with your wife when you were wrong, or after, you know, shouting off at the kids, and then you still preached and still produced gospel ministry to people who needed to hear it, although you might have been struggling with something for a season.
Sure.
Internally.
Yeah.
But do we say then all of those messages, or anyone that you've brought to Christ when you were struggling with, you know, coveting your neighbor's house or the bigger garage or car, like
yeah
and yeah. so not to minimize the sexual sin that happened, but to say than, you know, 20 years ago when he, you know, spoke to a forum and it caused people to come to a realization of the gospel. No, that's absolutely genuine.
Yes, yes.
And it's good biblical truth. And really, you could replay any of those sermons from the last 20 years to a group of people.
Yeah.
If you're focusing not on the man, but on the truth that is being conveyed, because that truth, it doesn't become less truth.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'll give you like an example, like Mark Driscoll. I have a bunch of his books, and probably 8 years ago, it wasn't a sexual thing, but he, you know, got, you know, paying to get his books on the number one Times bestseller list and some just bad leadership. So then he got fired and blah, 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 blah. And I had a few people ask, like, oh, are you going to throw out all your Mark Driscoll books? I'm like, why? Mm-hmm. Just because he was an idiot and made some really bad choices. Like, some of those books really helped shape my, like, early ministry and what how I taught and stuff like that. So I agree with you. Like, there's, it's not like, oh, busted. Now I got to burn all my rabbi
now
books.
Now I got to find another Christian leader to worship.
or even, and it's true. Like, is the truth that I gathered from that really truth? It's like, well, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The Holy Spirit has gone before that message and revealed that to your heart, opened your eyes to see and hear that word, which caused salvation.
Yeah.
And the vehicle was Ravi that ultimately crashed.
Yep. So I think it's natural to feel like disappointed, shocked, those kind of things, because it is shocking. But I think, too, like you just said, like, if you were super impacted by, you know, Ravi's teaching, for instance, or someone else's, you know, I have a few Bill Hybel books that really helped shape my ideas of leadership early on. So when he came out, I didn't go burn them. Like, I just went.
Home office instead of work office?
Yeah. That'll go in my heresy section. Yeah. No. But I think, it could possibly, and we've already touched on it, be exposing, like, when we idolize people, like, you know, I love Tim Keller, right? I think he's a brilliant man. I have all of his books, but if it came out that, you know, would I be absolutely devastated? I would be disappointed.
Yeah.
But I don't worship Tim Keller.
Because you don't know him.
And I've never met him before in my entire life.
Yeah.
And yet I really appreciate his books and his writings. But he has helped me worship Jesus. That's the point. Like, all of these Christian celebrities, like, we got to be really careful that it doesn't become worship where we idolize these people. I think it's okay to appreciate people who help us grow in our faith. But as soon as you see, like, I don't know, this celebrity, oh, if I ever met him, ooh, I'd faint. And I'm like, okay, there's an issue there. Like,
I think I also want to encourage anybody listening who's struggling with it to say, like, what we're saying here is like sin, no matter the sin, especially in like the case of sexual sin and some of those big things in Christian leadership, absolutely horrible, disgusting. But it's okay to mourn that. Like, if you're upset about it, that's okay. Like don't, we're not trying to justify and say, well, you shouldn't be surprised. You should just be happy, go lucky and keep on your way. Right. Like, like the Bible describes, like, all of creation mourns as in childbirth, right? That includes us. So when we follow God and we see sin, that should disgust us. Yeah. That should be a sad thing. There should be a breaking of our hearts because it's not what God intended for his creation, right?
Yeah.
So our reactions to something like this, when we're shocked, when we're upset, when we're emotional, whether it's sad or happy, all those things are normal and natural responses to something like this. So we're not trying to say that you shouldn't have an emotional response or that you shouldn't be disappointed in this because sin is disgusting, no matter who does it.
Yeah. That's good.
So, but what we're trying to encourage you is to say, if you are disappointed in this, maybe ask God to show you why this happened, whether it's going to affect your own walk with God, whether it will affect other people. 'Cause God is greater than Ravi Zacharias. God is greater than any Christian leader or any sin, right? So to be encouraged that we follow God and not those leaders, and sin is horrible, and it's okay to mourn that.
Yeah. Well, we're going to switch gears a bit. And so here's the, if you've ever driven stick, here's the big like lurch. You know what I'm talking about? Driven stick, mm-hmm. like standard? Yeah. Okay. You gave me a weird look.
I did my driving test on a standard car.
Oh, there you go. So hopefully that's been helpful. But we want to start introducing some segments that we're going to do each and every week that we'll end our time with. So this segment, yeah, I'm going to play our...
Two truths and a heresy.
Two truths and a heresy. Not today. Yeah. Here's our intro music for our new segment.
Context is key.
So it's time to play Context is Key.
Woo-hoo!
Or is it Context?
That's good, yeah.
So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to read a... Each time we do this segment, we're going to take a verse that oftentimes is taken out of context.
One of those coffee cup verses.
And I'm going to pick one of you to be the person who's going to use it completely out of context.
Ooh.
And then the other person is going to say, now here's what... The context actually. This is what this verse actually means.
And we don't know what the verse.
I haven't told the guys the verse yet.
Low key stressing.
So, this week
it'd be funny if we both thought it was like we both got the context wrong.
Yeah, I agree with what he said. I think that's right on. Oh boy,
podcast over.
Yeah. And this is the last episode of the. Oh, man. So, Philippians 4:13.
Ooh,
I can do all things through Him who strengthens me. So, Corlin, I want you to take that out of context and tell me what it means.
I mean, I can probably shoot three-pointers all day because I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. You know, no matter the context, no matter how many people I'm up against, I could hit that three-pointer any day because God is with me.
So what you're saying, Pastor Corlin, is that applies to, like, anything? So if I – man, I got this new recipe – I can do it though. I can do all things.
Yeah. For sure.
Cam. Context is key.
This verse is so annoying. You see it, you know, painted on walls, tattooed on.
So I'll people. Tell you, in our old youth room.
Don't you have a tattoo? Philippians 4:13?
Yeah, Philippians 4. No, it's Ezekiel 23:19.
Right.
That's my. Don't look that up. Oh, this is a terrible segment. I'll tell you, there was a when I became the youth pastor in Maple Ridge, there was a poster on the wall, and it was a guy slam dunking.
Right.
And it said, do your best. God will do the rest. And then it had Philippians 4:13.
It's like those cat posters that you see that's like, just believe. It's
okay, like, so if that, some people might be listening going like, that's not what it means.
Well, I think, you know, if I were... to defend, like if I were to take it out of context, it would be a little more like the Christianese kind of like, you know, I can really, you know, get this bigger mortgage and I can figure it out because I can do, you know, I can,
yeah, yeah,
all of these things. But it's amazing when you actually read the Bible before and after the verse, you're actually painted, the narrative is completely different where it's talking from a position of, I've once experienced fulfillment, wealth, everything I needed to operate, and then I've been brought low. And it's talking about God's provision where, you know, I've learned how to be content with little. I've learned how to be brought low. Mm-hmm. I've learned how to operate with less than enough.
Yeah.
And I can do that because I've been strengthened by God. So that's quite a different spin as to what we might be more familiar with. But it's so stupid to think that because that is the way the Bible reads. And we can spend the next, you know, half an hour on parachuting into verses and then using them to propel ridiculous ideas.
Only one verse per segment. So,
yeah.
So we're strengthened by the Lord to be in ministry, to be in relationship, to be in community, even if we feel less than, even if we feel not enough, it's because of Him that we're able to operate well in those spaces. And by operate well, it's, you know, I've felt less than before. I've struggled with feelings of like, I'm not good enough, but because of Jesus, I'm good enough to be a friend, to be a husband, to be a dad. Because of Jesus, I'm strengthened to do all those things.
I wish we had like an applause.
Context is key.
Yeah. But I love it. Bang on. So Philippians 4:13 doesn't mean that you'll, you know, sink that three-pointer or bake that perfect pie. It exactly what you
it's
said.
It's not the reason you graduated high school.
No, exactly. That's good. Mm-hmm. Awesome. This has been Context is Key.
Context is key.
So we'll do some type of segment like that at the end of each podcast. I want to do Two Truths and a Heresy. I think that'd be hilarious.
And just sell it stone-faced, right?
So yes, hopefully this has been a helpful podcast for you. You can always, like I said at the beginning, subscribe, leave us a 5-star review. And if you have things that you want us to talk about, you can always message us, and we would love to talk about them. So thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.